Jesse and I know because we've studied dramatic theory.
Oh,
Freddie made the tragic flaw in the story.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I stand corrected there. I know where Mike is coming from, though, Professor. He's trying to be stupid. No, Mike, that's my buddy. I love Mike. I really love Mike.
Well, you tell Mike that went over
my Michael.
Oh, he can hear you.
I know he can.
Oh, my
that's
God.
That's what I'm saying. Michael.
Oh, Michael. Yeah, I'm not going to even call him Michael. I'm not going to
do
that.
Well, I just called him Michael.
That is his name.
You know. Yeah.
It is Michael.
We're trying to listen to Professor Pop Culture talk to us about the Superfly trilogy.
Jesse's like, William, go on. Just go on.
And Jazz, perhaps you could appeal to him and control. Oh, this is so much fun.
Yeah.
Hey, this is so much fun.
So let me go to my next question and see if we can bring some sanity back to this. Talk to us about, and I know this is a very broad question I'm about to ask you, but make it, you know, talk to us in 3 to 4 minutes about the Blaxploitation movie movement and how Ron's legacy is a part of this movement.
Yeah, very
great question.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I have to go all the way back to the race movie period, which was the first independent cinema that this country has ever had, because African Americans who were very upset by the depiction of us in Birth of a Nation, because we were very upset about the stereotypes that were perpetuated, we started our own cinema. We were not permitted to be a part of the Hollywood system, so we started our own. Between 1915 and 1951, there were 500 race movies that were made because of poor storage.
Exposure.
And exposure. 400 of those films deteriorated. There are now 100 that exist. The main filmmaker of that era was one named Oscar Michel. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's one that stands out the most. So after 1951, because that was what? Post-war. That was right after World War II. Okay. Mm-hmm. And 4 years later, you're going to have, Brown v. Board. Okay. And so integration was around the corner. And because all of this was happening, you see, during that time, they had what was called Midnight Ramble. Midnight Ramble was on the, we call it the urban circuit now. You would go up to the balcony from midnight to 3 a.m. and you would just watch a double or triple bill, okay? And the movie tone newsreels, in between, in the little featurettes, okay? And so when that ended from 1951 to 1967, you had what was called the No Negro period, in which you are creating an African American that was a part of the talented 10th or very scant depictions. Not depictions, scant presentations of us. We weren't there very often. And then when we came up, it was the same group of people. Hollywood black actors, there was a network. You didn't need an agent because to get jobs, because it was word of mouth. And you will find the same people, Mantan Moreland, Ruby Dandridge. Of course, the biggest star of all out of that clique was Ruby's daughter, Dorothy Dandridge, okay? Joel Flewellen, okay? It was a network of those folks. And, I'm quoting Ozzie Davis, every now and again, green pastures or something like that will pop up, okay? You know, you would get a green pastures, and then you have to wait 5 more years for the next black film.
Man, look.
To come out, okay? Then, William, let us not forget the Dirty Dozen. Who got killed first? Jim Brown, okay? Yes. So mm-hmm. you had that stuff.
Wow.
That was happening, okay? Well, 63, Kennedy is killed. Also 63, Maker Evers is killed. 65, Malcolm is killed. All of these torrential events are occurring.
Wow.
And so now Hollywood is noticing that theater attendance is dropping. The counterculture, this new hippie movement, and everything that's happening with the civil rights movement with African Americans, people were not going to the movies.
Wow. But then
you had the Golden Age group like Marilyn Monroe, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, those folks, okay, they were, well, Marilyn's gone. Audrey Hepburn, let's use her. But that group, they're aging now. Mm-hmm. So now here's the question. Who do we cater to? The country's changing. Do we still work the aging actors, or do we try to play to the younger generation who mm-hmm. no one over 30 could understand? Okay. So, 1967, there was a young man from France. He made a film called The Story of the 3-Day Pass. Mm-hmm. He becomes a delegate for the San Francisco Film Festival. His name was Melvin Van Peebles. He wins the San Francisco Film Festival. So Columbia Pictures gave him a 3-picture deal. The only film that came out of that was a film called what? Watermelon
Whoa.
Man. Watermelon Man. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. White man wakes up in the morning and he becomes black. Okay. That comes out in 1969. Okay. Life magazine photographer Gordon Parks, through the help of John Cassavetes, becomes the first motion picture film, African American motion picture film director in Hollywood, with The Learning Tree. Okay.
Yeah.
That he not only wrote, but directed, produced, and scored the picture. Okay.
Wow.
All right. And then in 1970, Ozzie Davis comes on with what? Cotton Comes to Harlem. Okay.
Oh.
In 1971, Van Peebles, he jets his 3-picture deal, and with his own money, creates Sweet Sweetbacks.
I saw that movie.
Okay, which he could not have done without a $500,000 loan from Bill Cosby.
Okay? What? Whoa, yeah. That is too deep.
Yeah, exactly.
That is deep, man. So, Professor. So,
with the standard a sweepback, then this movement is created, and then you get the ball rolling. Okay, Sweepback comes out April of 1971. In June of 71, Shaft comes out.
Wow!
So Superfly. I tell my students, these are the 3 S's. You must know the 3 S's. Uh-huh. Sweepback, Shaft, Superfly. Uh-huh. And all of chapter 3 in the book is about how Sweepback capitalized from the insights of both Sweepback and Shaft.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Okay. So, Superfly owes a debt to Sweepback and Shaft. Okay.
Whoa.
Come the film that it became, but it completes the process of standard. After mm-hmm. Superfly, then all these other films, especially from American International, the B movie studio, okay, mm-hmm. that put out Coffee, Foxy Brown, Blackula, just to name a few, The Mac, okay.
Right. And how about Car Wash? Was that all incorporated?
American International. American International. All of those, so many films were taking, copying the formula. Now we have a formula for soul cinema. You got to have militants.
That's right.
You got to have militants. You got to have pimps, prostitutes. You got to have pushers. You know, it's this formula. Do you remember a film called Disco 9000?
No, I don't.
With who?
With Johnny Taylor. Yeah, I'll send you the link, Jazzy.
Please.
Disco 9000. It's Superfly. Instead of drugs, it's the record industry.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Be back and right after this.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I've met many people over the years, and in my opinion, I have found that people are the same everywhere. They have the same fears, shed similar tears, die in so many years. The oppressings have suffered the most in every continent, coast to coast. Now our lives are in the hands of the pusher man. We break it all down in hopes that you might understand how to protect yourself. Don't make no profit for the man. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. You're something kind of money. He's shrewd as he can be, in such a way you'll never see. It's a terrible thing inside when your natural high has died. The weaker turn to dope aside their hope. And I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. Thank you.
Curtis Mayfield. Curtis Mayfield. So glad that I can see my life's a natural high. We've got the professor. Pop culture. Along with me and WG. And the Jazzy Diva. Back, y'all.
At one time, the only soundtrack in film history to outgross the film. Mm-hmm. Okay. At one time. And one of the first, if not the first, soundtrack to be released before the release of the film, which served as an invitation to the film's core audience and contributed to the large opening weekend in 1972.
Jess?
Yes. Oh, I'm just still intrigued by everything he's saying. My big question is, did you finish about the Blaxploitation movie and movement, and what was your reason for writing the book? Did you finish talking about the Blaxploitation movie?
I did, and I did not finish. I'm going to do this as quickly as possible so I can get to your next part. Ron O'Neill's contribution to it. Ron O'Neill's contribution was playing to a T, mm-hmm. a character that impacted the culture of the diaspora so much that Priest is now considered a folk hero. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. Wu-Tang Clan, they had a song on their Better Tomorrow album simply titled Ron O'Neill. Okay. Mm-hmm. Snoop Dogg's Doggy Dogg World music video. He was on there. Okay.
Wow.
Was an empowering, symbol. And we have to remember that, especially in the first few years of the 70s decade, you know, these films, people were like, they can argue about it or not, but these were empowering film documents. I love what Russ Mitchell of CBS News once said. He said of Shaft, that film was just as empowering as any speech that Martin Luther King ever gave.
Wow.
I want to make that clear. He did not say, never said more empowering. He said just as empowering. Okay, for black men at that time. You gotta remember, they just killed King, a couple years earlier, okay? And so here is, you know, these film documents coming out in theaters, you know, where previously, you know, you're celebrating Doris Day.
Man.
And Tab Hunter. Okay, now we're on the screen, man. And
wow.
Away from the white. Okay, so.
You know what? I saw. Yeah.
What, was,
hmm? No, I'm sorry. Continue.
What was the other part of your question, Plasma?
How did Ron O'Neill's and his work contribute to the blaxploitation movement?
Yeah, as I was saying, maybe I did answer it, that he his work made Priest a folk hero and also a motif for a movement that was going to come to dawning a few years afterwards called hip hop. He is now okay. A hip hop symbol, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, as a folk hero. But the funny thing about it, Jazz mm-hmm. WB, he has felt that he never gave the true full percentage of his talent with that role. You know, O'Neill was a classically trained Shakespearean actor. He was trained at Caramere, okay? Yeah. This man has done Shakespeare in the Park. This man did Lear in New York mm-hmm. City.
Come on. Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, and the thing that he talked about was, you know, no one really knew, you know, the scope or the range of his talent. After the debacle of Superfly TNT, he would go to mm-hmm. auditions, and he said that casting directors really thought that he was a hustler when he would walk in. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Then there was the biggest insult of all. In 1984, CBS had a short-lived television show called Bring 'Em Back Alive. And he played a Middle Eastern Shah, okay?
Okay.
And
interesting.
And in the script, he was supposed to be in bed with a beautiful blonde woman.
Of course.
They rewrote it and had him in bed with a chimpanzee.
What?
And what?
And he said, what the heck? What the
come
heck?
On.
What?
And they said, well, we just thought it would, the producer said we thought it would be more funnier, more comic relief than to put the chimpanzee in. And he says, but I'm the Sultan of Bhutan. He said, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm supposed to be in bed with a blonde. Well, you know our Southern affiliates, you know. And
what?
And he was happy because he got a bit of a pay increase that he didn't have in a while. CBS, right? So he just dropped it. He didn't care
if
he was going to be broke, if he was going to demean himself as such.
Right.
So, but here's something else. He played in the first PG-13 film, Red Dawn, okay, as the Dominican general, I believe. And a few years after that, of course, millennials know him as Whitney Gilbert's father in A Different World, as a recurring role. So.
This is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm speechless.
Okay.
I have no words. Yeah. I do have a message.
It's just Superfly just overshadowed everything else.
Everything else. Right. Professor, he had other acting roles. Okay. That makes sense to me. Yeah.
Got a text from Mad Mike.
Oh no.
No.
All right.
Mentioned something about...
What is he saying?
We want to have you advertising your book on the Mad Mike and Wild Will Coast to Coast show.
We can do that.
When you're available.
Oh, thank you.
This is intriguing.
It is.
I'm loving this.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, guys, you can pick it up at Amazon, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Hey.